I put in a question about Aldo Caselli, and I don't know whether you would be willing to talk a bit about Aldo or not.
Oh, I would be happy to talk about Aldo. I had inherited Aldo from the financing during the war period, and I became aware of two facts about Aldo very promptly. One was that he was meticulous and indefatigable in carrying out his financial and supervisory activities. And the other was that Aldo had an innate way of offending people with his insistence on precision and reliability of reporting. And I remember talking with Aldo about that at some length after I'd been around for about a year. And I decided that, and by agreement with Aldo, that I would support him in the kind of action he took. I wouldn't approve of his somewhat harsh manners in dealing with people, but I didn't think I could do much about it, and that I was prepared to take that as a cost of having him in the position of pushing very hard for economy and efficiency in the day-by-day operations. I'm sure that after Aldo left, but I'm not sure. I thought it highly likely that after Aldo left, the office staff would have to be increased, and that the modes of handling financial matters would ease up and become less rigorous. But I thought the cost of it while he was here was a cost that was worth taking, and I had to bear part of the burden of it. And so Aldo and I recognized this. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, when a major battle developed between Aldo and Seton Schroeder, whom I'd appointed as supervisor of buildings and grounds,
yes.
And it was a choice between Aldo and Seton, I had to tell Seton I felt he'd better go. And there were, from time to time, there would be members of the faculty or student body who would come to complain about Aldo. And if the complaint was about his manner, I would tell them that I disapproved, as I had told him. But if it was about the methods or the financial considerations, I almost always supported him. Mm-hmm. Aldo and I had an agreement about this. And I know that when he went down to Washington for the new job, it gave him new opportunities, but also that he felt that unless he had fairly sound support from the top, that he wouldn't be able to withstand the kind of criticism that would come to him.
He didn't object to reaching out and taking on responsibilities. His dealings with the students, for example, over damages and that kind of thing, which today we would expect the dean's office to take care of, but Aldo dealt directly with such people, didn't
yes,
he?
Yes, yes, he did. But of course, at that time, we had only one dean. And, I mean, Roberts Hall was a dean, a vice president, a president, and the registrar. That was it. That was the administrative organization. And then over in another building was Aldo, and that was the works.
He and Mrs. Nugent. Was Mrs. Nugent here then?
Yes,
too, as
yes,
well?
Yes. And Marie Stefan.
Yes.
Do you remember her?
Yes, Marie only retired within the last 10 years or so, I think.
Yes, yes.
And she had nothing else in her life except working here at the college. Mm-hmm. That was her whole being, I think. Mm-hmm. I remember Aldo was was a patron of the arts in addition to everything else.
Oh, yes. And he helped immensely with artworks.
Yes.
And tasteful decoration and so on.
Books and concerts, arranging for orchestral groups to come from Italy and
yes.
concerts.
Yes.
And,
yes, he was a cultivated man. I had large respect for him.
There were rumors later on, after your time, that he had some little side businesses on the side that he turned to for doing printing and that kind of thing. Did you have any sense of that kind of business?
I didn't have any inkling of that.
Yes.
If I had, I would have talked to him about it.
I suspect that this fitted into his own ethical behavior as an Italian, that was something which was much more acceptable to him than perhaps it would have been to Anglo-Saxons.
Now, were those rumors verified?
I think in some instances they were. Yes.
They were, yeah.
And I think people eventually talked with Hugh Borton and Aldo was helped to leave here eventually. Not that he was fired, but he was given some encouragement to leave, I think. And whether this had always gone on or whether this was something that developed in the later years, I wasn't quite sure.
Now, I wasn't aware of it.
Yes.
But I also was not surprised that Aldo left after I left, because he and I had a special kind of relationship that is a very frank understanding. Mm-hmm. Aldo, you go so far, and I won't support you if you do this, but I will support you if you do that.
Are there things that you feel that I've left out that I should have asked you about or that you would like to speak about in connection with your 9.5 years?
Well, I think there might have been two aspects that would be worth noting if you're trying to assess what went on while I was
Yes.
here. One was a question which lots of people asked me from the outside. How did you maintain your scientific interests while you were president of a college? Mm-hmm. Because I'm one of the few people they've seen who was president of a college and then went on and became a member of the National Academy of Sciences. I don't know how many have or faculty have done that. Maybe one other, I don't know. But certainly not many college presidents have done it. And I think it's worth noting that while I was here, I tried to do two things very consciously to maintain my scientific interest, even though I'd never reached the stage that would convince Margaret Mead that I should never look back. But one was that I taught a course each year in my own field of interest that required students to review literature and problems in which I was interested. Mm-hmm. And so I think it may have been beneficial for the students. Mm-hmm. Some of them who took the course seemed to think so. But it was also very beneficial for me because it required me several times a week getting my mind around a particular scientific issue. And the other was I accepted a series of appointments on committees or commissions that involved review of materials in mm-hmm. my field. The Hoover Commission, for example, a United Nations Committee on River Basin Development, a UNESCO Committee on...
Your voice is getting low again.
Yeah, a UNESCO Committee on Arid Zone Research, which was the beginning of their path-breaking international research program on environmental matters. And in that fashion, I managed to keep myself from being entirely an administrator. Mm-hmm. By the time I came to look for another job, I did have enough of exposure to the field so that I hadn't lost out on it. Mm-hmm. I hadn't made any very significant contributions, but I had at least kept up. Nobody was coming to offer me an appointment mm-hmm. in a scientific field. The last year I was here, I did get an offer of a presidency of an Ivy League university, which helped me clarify my judgment as to what direction I wanted to do, that I wanted to make.
What university?
It was an Ivy League university.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And the chairman of the board and the chairman of their search committee came down to see me mm-hmm. and tell me that they had agreed to elect me president of their institution. Mm-hmm. And they'd never consulted me about this. of course, you couldn't do that these days with all of the affirmative action and academic procedures, but they did that. Mm-hmm. And one fellow's private plane and told me that they decided to elect me. And I, meanwhile, was negotiating with Chicago.
Yes.
I didn't have an offer from Chicago. So I thought about it. And I told them I would think it over. In fact, I knew what my answer was going to be, that I would choose not to go. Mm-hmm. And then I told them that I wouldn't go. But I still didn't have an offer from Chicago. So I was taking a major risk, but it was the decision that Ann and I needed to face.
Yes.
This is the direction we wanted to go. But nobody was knocking on my door to come to join in some scientific enterprise. And I had to convince Chicago that they should take a chance on me and let me perform. That I subsequently got a number of offers with foundations or other universities. But I think it's interesting that it took a lot of hard work to maintain one's familiarity with the field while one was doing fundraising and dealing with the student council and the like.
Your age was an advantage, wasn't it, in going back into the academic world?
Yes, it was.
Hugh Borton went back to Columbia, but in a sort of a senior advisor role rather than back into active teaching again after his 10 years. But he was, what, 15, 20 years older than you?
Oh, yes, he was, well, yes, he was at least 15 years
yes.
older than I was.
In fact, he was 65, I think, when he, around 65, when he mm-hmm. did retire.
And when I went back to Chicago, I was very fortunate because first year I was able to get a good research grant mm-hmm. to start the kind of research I'd been hoping to do.
Yes.
And that enabled me to get a leg up in the field.
There was a second point you said you wanted.
I think in the histories of the college, it's important to talk about the role of the president's wife.
That's what I was going to ask next. About
what kind of a role the wife has. And in some situations, I think she doesn't have much of a role. In others, she has. I think in our case, Ann had a very important role mm-hmm. in the kind of relationship she had with students and with the younger faculty wives. There was tremendous strength, I think, for the college to have mm-hmm. somebody that people liked and obviously was giving the best she could to help the college. We always entertained the board of managers, and we had various alumni groups back, and in the course of the year we entertained all the seniors in smaller parties and mm-hmm. so on. And that was a very heavy load for Ann with three children mm-hmm. In the younger ages.
Were they all born here at Haverford?
No. When we came, we had one child. Mm-hmm. who was in a basket at the time, but then the other two arrived, and so yes. Ann was doing these things while she was mm-hmm. having the children. Very much helped by Helen Cadbury Bush, who you remember lived with us.
Oh, yes.
Was just an extraordinary person, loved by us and everybody else. So when we got to Chicago, Ann then, and our youngest child went away to Scattergood School, Ann then got around to doing what she particularly wanted to do, which was field work. Mm-hmm. She went to East Africa with me, and we wrote a book together, and mm-hmm. she continued to publish in this field on her own. But while she was at Haverford, she really devoted herself to the life of the college community. Mm-hmm. And that was just immensely helpful, I think, to us all. I think many people around here would be surprised to see the recent issue of the Journal of the London School of Tropical Medicine, which dedicates an issue to her, because they wouldn't have thought of her as being a scholar.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That the question of faculty of presidents' wives was really very important up into the 60s, wasn't it? And then it sort of, that is, part of the consideration was always the president's wife.
Yes.
And then it sort of got out of the way as women's lib began to take over.
Women's lib, in effect, interdicted it.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Even at Pendle Hill, when we chose the last executive secretary, we made a conscious decision that the spouse of the executive secretary ought not to be a cookie pusher, and turned out we appointed a woman, and her husband has served cookies on occasion, but it was felt that the wives of Pendle Hill directors had really been imposed on in many ways, and I suspect that some college presidents' wives had that feeling as well.
Yeah. I don't think Ann felt she'd been imposed on. Mm-hmm. She entered into the Haverford assignment at the age of 26 with her eyes open as to what would happen, and she consciously knew she would not do her professional work while she was here. Mm-hmm. She was, so she joined with me in feeling that we ought to get into another situation when we could gracefully, and that we'd probably done what we could here. But there is a major social change that's occurred with respect to the role of a wife.
Yes, and you spoke of her relationship to faculty wives. That's gone too. The Faculty Women's Club disappeared, and there are very few faculty wives who don't have their own careers, or faculty husbands in many instances who don't have their own careers. It's just an entirely different world from the 40s and 50s.
In some respects. Now, some of Ann's very good friends on the faculty were Ann Summers and Helen Hunter, both of whom have had their own professional careers.
Yes.
But they nevertheless had a kind of a collegial relationship around their children and around the life of the campus. And Ann felt she had a responsibility to foster that. I think if she were to come into the job today, she wouldn't feel that. She wouldn't feel that was president's wife's role, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is there anything else that we ought to put on this tape?
No, I can't think of anything else. We've talked about the various ways I use my time. Mm-hmm. We haven't said very much about my relationship to students.
No, actually we haven't.
The most important relationships I had with students hinged around the student council. And it's interesting, in later life, some of my closest ties with Haverford alumni have been with men who were officers of the student council. In the years I was here. people like Jerry Freund and Steve Sachs, mm-hmm. Paulding Phelps, mm-hmm. all of whom have gone on quite distinguished careers on their own. But I knew them because I used to meet with them frequently. Mm-hmm. I took them down to Four Way Lodge for a weekend every mm-hmm. year. I don't know whether you ever heard about the Four Way Lodge.
No, I've been there with groups which Jack Coleman took.
Yes, and, well, I guess Jack had to say.
Yes, and I think other presidents have mm-hmm. borrowed that facility also.
I think I was the first one to use it, uh-huh. but it was an excellent opportunity. But the other thing, of course, one advantage of collection was I could sit in collection, and when the speaker was boring, I could refresh my memory as to the names of every face out there in the hall. So I did know everybody mm-hmm. at the time.
Yes, I know you did.
And collection was one way of facilitating that.
What size?
And I think every student who graduated had been in our house a couple of times mm-hmm. by the time they left.
What size classes did you have in your geography course?
15 was the maximum. Mm-hmm. Because they had to write an essay every week.
Mm-hmm. Because I know Jack's class tended to get larger sometimes, and he brought in guest speakers and so on.
No, I concentrated on their writing their 500-word yes. essays. Mm-hmm. And some of them still complain about it when I meet them.
I think that, I guess you realize that the last history of the college, the title is sort of stolen from one of your reports to the corporation, The Spirit and the Intellect. It may be a slight adaptation, but it certainly reflected the sense that you were very consciously seeking to cultivate both the intellect and the spiritual qualities of the student body when you were here. Am I correct in my feeling that?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't have come if I hadn't felt that was a principle, purpose.
It seems to me that some of the finest reports to the corporation that presidents have produced came from you during those years, and they do have a place in the history and the ethos of the college in many ways.
I don't know that the reports have much of a place, Ed, but the feeling that led to writing the report.
The spirit that was expressed in them. Do I remember correctly that you often gave those reports without referring to notes or text at the time?
Yes.
This was my feeling.